Hi, my name's Steve Usher, and welcome to the Experienced Designers Podcast. Hello, everybody. A warm welcome to a brand new episode of the Experienced Designers. So I'm just going to invite you to just listen to this very short sentence. Humans and robots working together. What did you think of when I just said that? What envisaged in your mind? Was it R2-D2, C-3PO, or was it Alexa telling you your schedule this morning? On one end of the spectrum, there's the apocalyptic viewpoint. You know, millions of jobs lost, leaving people out of work, lost, requiring reskilling or finding new ways of making income. On the other side, there's a utopian view that robots will coexist in our daily lives, at work and at home, automating and taking care of all the little jobs, processing data at scale and making millions of calculations every second, offering us mere humans the opportunity to focus on the tasks that make us truly unique. In 2016, we saw Google DeepMind's AlphaGo take on the legendary Lee Sedol of South Korea, winner of 18 world titles of Go, one of, if not the most complex game on this planet. And not only did AlphaGo win 4-1, it also created new unconventional moves never seen or considered by grandmasters who have been playing the game for decades. We're already seeing in manufacturing the benefits of robots, offering workers the opportunity to focus on a much broader range of tasks, leaving robots to do the heavy work or repetitive tasks. Boeing is one example, where robots drill millions of holes ready for the rivets in the aircraft. SEB, a major Swedish bank, now uses a virtual assistant called Ada, which interacts with millions of customers, handling natural language conversations such as how to open an account or cross-border payments. She also asks callers follow-up questions to solve their problems and analyzes a caller's tone of voice, whether it becomes frustrated or versus kind of appreciative, and uses that information to provide better services later. And on the occasion, kind of one in three times, she's unable to resolve an issue. It turns the caller over to a human customer service rep and then monitors that interaction to learn how to solve similar problems in the future. So with Ada handling basic tasks, human representatives can concentrate on more complex issues, especially with happy customers or unhappy customers who require extra handholding. And these are just, you know, a few examples of the pace of progression. You know, one thing we can all predict with accuracy is the change is relentless and the pace is only increasing. There's no getting away from it. So what does it all mean? How can we prepare for the future of work where robots exist? How do we ensure we're making the most out of this amazing opportunity to shape an exciting future that benefits humanity without it becoming a real-life Terminator movie? I had the opportunity to meet Raki Rajani and Stefan Moritz from McKinsey Design, who kindly gave me some of their time to talk about this topic and offer their own perspectives on preparing for humans and robots working together. So Raki, Stefan, welcome to the Experienced Designers.
Hello.
Hey there.
Hey, well, welcome to the show. And so just to, in the way of an introduction, Raki, would you mind going first? Just give the audience a bit of an overview into your background and career and perhaps something you're passionate about.
Sure, very happy to. I am an associate partner at Quantum Black, which is a data analytics, artificial intelligence, machine learning company that's part of McKinsey. I'm also the global head of design here too. I have a background in psychology and engineering and also design. And the thing that really fascinates me is how we're going to pull our disciplines together to create the future that we want to live in versus just reacting to the things that we've been dealt and the hand that we've been dealt. And the thing that I'm really interested in is space. And by that, I mean outer space.
Yes, I saw something on your LinkedIn profile, which obviously, you know, I have to ask, just in relation to the new space economy and the kind of, you know, how you create civilization from scratch on Mars.
Yep, absolutely. I think it's our opportunity to really think differently about what we would do if we go and inhabit somewhere else. The natural tendency would be to take what we know here. And I think our opportunity is to think beyond that.
Yeah, I agree. Stefan, I hope you got something in your back pocket beyond Mars.
Yeah, I like scuba diving more than I love flying by planes. But no, I think my passion the last 20 years or so has been around service design, which obviously you can apply for better customer experience, but also employee experience, which I've learned are very connected. So I joined Veride helping to build up our service design practice 8 years ago, and I'm now enjoying the collaboration with McKinsey and helping companies basically create stellar customer experience by empowering their employees.
Yes, very important. So I think, so the topic we're covering today, I think with both of your kind of focus areas and expertise will certainly be an interesting one. So we've come together today to talk about the future of robots and humans working together. Obviously a contentious topics in some quarters, fearful in others, exciting in others. But in terms of just delving in, shall we kick off around kind of robots? Let's dissect the topic. What defines a robot? Are there different kind of streams that's evolved over the years to come? And do we see anything kind of changing in the future? Rocky?
I think the way we think about robots is algorithms, essentially, right? This for us is not just about the metallic robot that you see jumping up and down. Yes, that's one instantiation of it. But anything that is a machine, anything that is an algorithm, anything that is playing a role in intelligence and something that is an interaction point between humans and the world, I think is how we think about robots. So our definition is fairly broad. And I think it has to be because we're talking about a world where we are constantly interacting with technology, with machines, with tools that augment our intelligence or help us find solutions to problems, right? And I think that's how we're thinking about robots. The field has evolved extensively, right, over the last many, many years. And as machines become more intelligent, as we start to see them more as partners versus tools, I think that's really going to change our relationship with them and how they impact what it is that we do, the problems that we solve, and more importantly, the way we work, which, as Stefan said, is something that is dear to both of our hearts because it's shifting dramatically.
It is. Where have we seen the evolution, Stefan? Where have we seen in terms of where we are today? Are there any particular sectors that you've seen that have really embraced the robotics, or whether they've kind of co-created or co-botted? You know, how any areas that you've seen?
I mean, it varies quite a bit. There are a lot of human support, physical things. And then there are a lot of chatbot examples in customer service, and you have the more sort of AI decision-making support. Mm-hmm. But I think what we got to when we discussed it, the mindset that we had today, like if you think about the moment when chess was battled out and Kasparov was beaten by a robot. Mm. That was very much us and them. What is interesting, I think, is what happened afterwards. You know, after he's been beaten, he's actually collaborated with a computer company to create Centurion Chess, which is now a discipline in chess where human-robot teams play against each other. And I think that's where Rocky and I were coming from with our vision, that we need to rethink how we work with robots from an us and them. You know, we have a robot as a tool, and we try to distinguish what humans are good at and what robots are good at, to a world where we have a true collaboration, like Centurion Chess.
Yes. And so in terms of the, have we got kind of any other examples of where Rocky, just from your perspective, where we see some really exciting developments? Anything where you think that this is really accelerating? Any examples you could share?
I think healthcare is one where it's really accelerating. And I think the other one that I think is fascinating is what we're seeing in terms of, you know, if you like, backstage robotics and in manufacturing, in supply chain management, in all of those industrial situations where it's not just about efficiency, but also about doing the right thing at the right time. So I think there's a whole bunch of examples in those industries that are really, really fascinating, that go beyond what we naturally think of, which is, you know, like autonomous vehicles and other front stage products and services. But what's happening to change some of the back end processes in businesses and in heavy industry businesses, I think is where the future of robotics is fascinating in terms of a collaboration between humans and robots. And then I think where we potentially will evolve to, as Stefan was just saying, right, is how do we include robots, algorithms, however we want to define them, as part of our teams, not as the servant to our thinking, but as the collaborative partner in our thinking. And I'm not sure there's been much done there, but I think that is a really great place for design to play a role in shaping what that interaction might look like and how it might manifest itself. And I think this is about experimenting with potential options and potential scenarios and things like that, which is why it's such an exciting space. I don't think it's something that's been quite approached with that mindset before. And that, I think, is where we're going to learn, iterate, and fail very fast. But that's exactly how we should be tackling it.
Interesting. Can I ask, in terms of the mindset that's been, you know, got to this point, even let's say obviously you mentioned about design mindset, what's been the mindset up to that point? Is it more kind of technology mindset? Is it more that perspective, or what's your thoughts?
I think Stefan, obviously weigh in here, but I think it's yes, been very led by tech, but I think it's had to be, right? Because it's coming. Most things in development are often engineering driven, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that bringing a design mindset to this now, but having said that, there has been a design mindset in this space for some time. If you look at, you know, conversational interfaces and things like that, chatbots and, you know, whatever it may be, or speech augmentation systems have always brought the user to the forefront because they are things that are there to help those who cannot speak themselves, et cetera, actually communicate with the world. So I think it's always had some element of that. But I think that if we want algorithms to be more social, then I think you really need to start bringing disciplines together from the get-go, not just to develop a use case, but actually think through really carefully how something should interact, react, be proactive, all of those human things that come to bear. I think that's why this is a really important time for design and also the social scientists to play a role here.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think in one way, Astrid Teller from Google X has done this cool graph that basically shows how human and organizational capability is sort of changing, or how adaptable we are, which is very slow. And then in contrast, how technology is accelerating at a, you know, digital, you know, rapid pace, exponential, which creates a disconnect between where we are and where technology is racing at. And that disconnect between where technology can be and where we are, you know, makes us a little bit puzzled, because everything that moves distracts humans just from, you know, probably in our cave time, that was very useful that we notice things that move fast. But now we're almost paralyzed by that. And I think the opportunity that I see is to not let this happen to us, but actually be proactive and shape it. And I think for any future of work thing, if we just let this be a self-fulfilling prophecy, it's going to get messy.
Yeah.
And if we see robots as, you know, the enemy taking our jobs away, it's the wrong way of thinking. I think the real problem isn't that, I mean, if you think about it, 50% of the tasks we do can be replaced by robots 5 years from now.
Yes.
That's a lot of tasks.
Yep.
Do I think that we will be sitting around bored? No. But we need to think about what do we want to do with that time. And if we are thoughtful with that and shape that, it could actually be a fantastic future. If we let it happen and, you know, basically just have people out of work and create a mess, then it's not necessarily a very desirable future. No. At the moment, globally speaking, 72% of people are not engaged at work.
Yep.
So they go to work, but they don't love it, they don't enjoy it, they don't go there with full energy, with full flow. That is a much bigger problem to solve than robots coming after our jobs.
True.
And I think that this vision that we're discussing of robot-human teams buddying up could be the way to solve that.
Yeah.
To basically say, let humans do what humans are really good at, but in the context of a partnership. Not like dividing up, you do that and I do that, but let's do it together in a much better way.
Yes.
And I think that's, you know, potentially an exciting future.
Yeah. So would this example apply then? For an example, I read there was a company in Germany, SEW Eurodrive, and they have, I mean, again, this is in kind of the manufacturing industry, where they were able to, you know, take two forms. So obviously the human aspect and the manual aspect, but then actually shape the robot aspect to the human work. So the human actually felt, or the individual working on the production line felt more fulfilled because they were actually able to create something from start to finish rather than just a small segment on a highly repetitive working rotation. So while the robots behind were doing the heavy lifting and the preparation behind, and then they did the whole piece. So is that the kind of things you're talking about here, or is there other aspects that perhaps beyond that?
I think it's the first level of what we're talking about.
Okay.
I think there's another company in Germany, now that you mentioned that, they've developed a technology that a human can wear a jacket that measures their movements and basically teach a robot how to do things. So there are these type of examples where robots and humans work hand in hand. And I think you have the same with machine learning, that we can adopt to each other and make that better. I think there's another level where it's even more integrated and where you don't have this division of labor, but you actually work together on the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. So what do organizations, where are organizations now? Because in my mind, I think there's still a lot of work to do, even on just the engagement, as you say, just even on the basic principles of improving engagement in the workplace. And I still think there's lots of organizations that are still, you know, systemically, or whether it's through their organizational structure, really even are struggling to adapt in a kind of digital time. So what some of the challenges that sit within that? Rucky, have you got any thoughts on that in terms of how organizations, or what you've seen in terms of organizationally adapting or creating this kind of innovative environment to be able to either, as you say, experiment or to get the best out of this kind of new wave of technology?
I think organizations are thinking about it. I think that the answer is going to take a while to kind of evolve, right? And that is because we're at the beginning of this. And at the moment, we are really thinking about it from the point of view of how do we deploy or enable, you know, the now with tech. I think that I think the question has not been asked around collaboration in the way that we are talking about it right now. And if it were, then I think we would have a more in-depth conversation about the social interactions and things like that. I just don't think that question has been asked that explicitly, which is perhaps why it's not being tackled that way yet. So I think our point here is let's ask it specifically and explicitly and then let's have the conversation about what that would mean. It's actually a pretty fun conversation to have, not just in a, you know, this will be a cool thing to do, but it is, I think, a very timely conversation to have, and a timely time to figure out what collaboration really means here. We talk about collaboration, you know, from a team point of view. We talk about diversity from a race, gender, culture, all of those things point of view. But I'm not sure we've talked about diversity from the point of view of all of those things, plus the machine being part of that team. Because we're really not talking about this as an enabler. We're talking about a machine, a robot being part of the team, which means that the level of conversation you have is different. The types of questions the machine should be able to answer and respond to are different. It's that kind of social that I think we're getting to. And we just probably haven't unpacked it. I think there's probably a lot of academic research here that is unpacking this and experimenting with it. But when we try and put it in a real life situation, how is that going to play out, right? That's fascinating. And I think that's where our opportunity lies to figure out what that could look like.
So just on that last point, I've talked to somebody, they have experimented with sort of an AI algorithm in their marketing team to find out, you know, what is effective and how people resonate with things. And they created a tool that is now part of the conversation. So rather than using it as an algorithm that you sort of feed and take things out, it's actually joining the meeting and sort of in real time, you know, optimizing different strategies, running them, giving feedback. So sort of is basically part of this discussion when they shape campaigns. So it becomes, you know, more naturally integrated in the conversation and brings like a fact base where you can basically say, okay, so how many people would actually click on that? And boom, you have the answer instead of waiting 2 weeks.
Yes.
So I think that you can see that potentially that is a different way of working. And it can help people that come from different backgrounds have a fact base, have a sort of joint access to what actually works and what doesn't work.
Yes. So I just wanted to delve into governance. Mm. So how do we ensure that the technology or the robots or this, how, you know, what's being developed and designed and created doesn't become an arms race? And so that the benefits are distributed as evenly as possible. Obviously it's going to be hugely disruptive. But also, you know, for the good of the human mankind, it can also potentially be used in other ways, perhaps not as beneficially. Have you got any kind of thoughts about how we plan for that, or some of the things that we may need to start thinking about in this perspective?
Yeah, I mean, very good question. And I'm not sure I have the answer. The way I would start thinking about this is to really ensure that as we start to build solutions, as we start to figure out what those interaction points are and interaction mechanisms are, and how we really are going to foster this collaboration, that we do it with the right minds in the room, which means social scientists, designers, engineers, legal folk, ethicists. That group of people working together to try and not govern, but ensure that we take a very thoughtful approach to this is how I would tackle it, versus the approach that says, how do you govern for this and what measures do you need to put in place, which you probably do have to do as well. But I think that as an afterthought is not the way to approach this. I think this has to be a consideration from the get-go. And I was just speaking at a conference on anthropology and technology, and we were talking about exactly that, right? Which is, how do we really, 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 instead of just talking about it, but really truly bring these disciplines together and these mindsets together to push where we're inevitably going forward, right? And not keep assuming that somebody has an opinion to add to where a solution is right now, but really get people involved in the solution. Because as we all know, if you don't do that from the get-go, you're band-aiding things. And I don't think this is a situation where we want to be providing band-aids. I think this is a situation where we want to be really conscious of the interactions that we're creating, of the new collaboration mechanisms that we're creating from the get-go.
Yeah. May I ask, is there anybody kind of taking a lead with this collaboration, or is it just at the moment, you know, quite early in its development? Is there anybody or specifically that, yeah, would be leading these types of conversations?
My thought is that organizations project by project are probably doing that. I've seen that in several places. And I think, you know, we try to do that in bringing multidisciplinary teams together for sure. Otherwise, I think academia is really exploring what that means. And you start to see, what do they call it? The and generation, the folks that had multiple educational disciplines and things like that really kind of coming together. And I think it's probably happening there quite a lot too. But the organizations that are really thinking about building teams that are teams who have a variety of mindsets is exactly the kind of team we need. And if we're talking about the future of work, and as Stefan said at the very beginning, right, part and parcel of the future of work and employee experience is how you think about team structure. And I think that is something we need to keep evolving.
Stefan?
Yeah, so I think that the things that I would recommend to a company are probably the same that governance and government need to also look at. And this is going to be a different domain than medicine, where you have an expert and, you know, public groups or, you know, society doesn't understand the depth of the medical expert, so they go to the doctor and get advice. This is going to be a topic that we all need to be involved in. So it's not good enough, because if you think about it as a black box, it's clear that people are afraid of it. But it also has the benefit of actually doing the things that we don't want to do. But if we sort of take the easy way out, we're not going to be able to shape it. And I think the other perspective, you know, one is the collaboration, and I think design can help with that. The other thing is dreaming, which, you know, the robots are not going to dream for us. It's a human capacity and the human opportunity to dream big. There's actually a cool quote from Garry Kasparov that I found when I looked at the chess story. And he said, if we fail, it's because we grew complacent and limited our ambitions. There's only one thing a human can do, and that's to dream. So let us dream big. And I think it's that spirit of being proactive and leaning in on this and thinking about what is the future we would actually like to have, and then team up with machines and AI to build it together. That's how I would go about it. It's a different governance model. But I think that's the one that will get us there in the right way, if you combine it with the collaborative learning.
Yes.
So I was just going to say, governance as dreaming is a really nice concept, or dreaming as governance is a really nice concept.
Yeah. But I mean, maybe we should go back to a couple of things that we see companies do that are probably practically actually useful for those out there that want to get in on this. And I think one that Rocky and I talked a lot about is, how do you demystify your data? I think so that has nothing to do with the physical robots. But I think the scary part of the non-physical robots is that you don't see them. So get your head around what data you have is pretty cool. And one example that I love, especially when you think about quantum black, you know, coming from Formula One, being able to predict what's going to happen with cars. Imagine you could predict, you know, who is going to have an accident in 2 weeks with relative accuracy. And then you combine that with a very caring service concept to support people in those situations. And you can actually avoid accidents. You know, as an insurance company, that is a pretty compelling paradigm. And that's actually something we could work with. So if you use data to get ahead of things and think about how would we like it to be, and actually offer support services rather than claims coverage. We have another client that looked at their churn, and it's very easy now with machine learning to find out what the patterns are. So you could be very reactive and say, we call everybody 2 weeks before when certain conditions are met because we know that otherwise they will churn. But you're just patching something up. If instead you use that and you do some research to understand why, you can actually sort of work on the root causes and really be very focused on where it matters. So I think working with that is something that any organization should do to start out with.
Agree. Rocky, any thoughts on that in terms of organizations starting out? What have you kind of come across or seen from your perspective?
I'm not sure in terms of starting out. I think that
or evolving.
Yeah, I think I think as Stefan has pointed out, there are situations where demystifying data is hugely important, and I think actually in all situations that's hugely important. If we want to build trust, if we want to have authentic interactions with data, with algorithms, I think that from the get-go, it's about trying to figure out where and how we apply data to situations that are going to help humans and help the organization. And I think that the examples that Stefan pointed out are absolutely relevant here, and I think a bunch more, especially in places like healthcare and things like that, where I don't think this is about having machines make decisions. I think this is about providing insights to help humans make decisions, and that is where data is super powerful.
Yes.
Yeah. I think the other thing that I've seen to be very effective also as a way to figure this out is to actually experience prototype. So for example, we worked with one airline that wanted to create a new omni-channel chatbot experience. And instead of building the chatbot, we role-played that. So we had one designer that was basically acting the chatbot. So we built just the interface, and we actually role-played it with real customers to learn how that would work, which is very cost-effective. And it helps you to learn what really matters. We've done another project with a pharma company a few weeks ago. They wanted to help doctors make better decisions by having sort of an AI infrastructure learning from how they recommend, and then give tips to each other through that engine. And we created a prototype of that and learned pretty quickly that the service of that was really good, but nobody wanted to share their data. So we could save $100 million not building that and actually figure out first what behaviors need to change or what mindset needs to change. Yeah. So I think that you don't need to build an AI to test it out. You don't need to build a chatbot to test it out. Mm. And I think with many technologies, that is a really useful way in to learn first what really matters, to crack the right thing. Then usually technology is available to do it at scale. But if you get stuck too quickly with technology, you basically do because you can, not because it's really, because it matters.
Mm-hmm. Superb.
Yeah, I think that's a really key point here, right? Is when we talked about experimentation and stuff like that, you can Wizard of Oz things to see how they're going to pan out. And I don't think we do enough of that. I think we go straight to let's build this thing when there's a whole bunch of prototyping in a really lo-fi way that will help us generate the answer. And it can be fast and furious, right? This isn't like 6 weeks of prototyping. This is the kind of fast and furious kind where it just helps you find the next question to answer versus assuming you've got the right question in the first place.
Yes.
And I think that's also a way to help people understand what this is, right? So if you do a workshop about AI, but all it is a improv theater role play. I mean, the first time I've seen body storming was a water cleaning plant in Denmark that had 20 employees role play how the water cleaning system works. You know, that is a fantastic way for a group to understand a complex system. And you could do the same for advanced topics and sort of, yes, it's not scalable, but you get everybody on board and you really think through what the risks are, how it should work. So I think that's actually very powerful.
Yes. So I'm going to just ask you both just your thoughts. So I'm just put you out on a limb potentially, but just pop your kind of your future hat on. Well, let's go maybe go as far advanced as like 2050. What's your predictions for from where we are now to perhaps utopia in 2050? Raki, what's your predictions or thoughts on that?
I was going to say, let Stefan go first.
Okay.
What am I?
Really?
Yeah. I'm trying to think what my predictions are. I don't think I have any predictions. But God.
No, but you know, what's your sense? I mean, where do you see this? What would you like to see maybe in 2050? Where, you know, if you could choose anything.
I think from the point of view of the topic that we're discussing, I think that what I would love to see is a situation, or rather, I would love to be standing in a room where the team is completely diverse from a human point of view, but also a human and machine point of view, right? And I think that's going to happen sooner than 2050. 2050 is a long way out.
Of course.
But yeah. I think if we do get to that state, I think the way we tackle climate change, the way we tackle healthcare, the way we tackle mobility, the way we understand intelligence and use it, I think is going to be much more not just thoughtful, but provide the opportunity for a future that we feel is conducive to really living in versus one that we are constantly trying to fix. And I think that 2050 is probably the right time frame for getting to that place. But that's where I hope we would be. And I know that's not a, you know, definitive answer of this has been cured or that has been changed. But I think that the power here is in improving decision making. The power here is in insights in a different way. The power here is in really bringing mindsets together and breaking down barriers and building a culture of trust and authenticity. And I think if we're talking about work and we're talking about collaboration between man and machine, I think we haven't got there despite trying for so many years. And I think that we will get there sooner than 2050, but we'll start to see the results of it by then.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, what's interesting about 2050, if you would have asked me 10, 15 years ago, I would have probably hoped that I'm retired by then and sort of don't have to work anymore. Where now, if I think about it, I hope that I do still work. And I think that is probably one of the big things that, you know, maybe our pensions aren't going to be the important thing, but actually our knowledge, our ability to keep current and keep adapting is very important. And if we can create a world where technology really helps us and we can be great at being human in that collaboration, you know, working could be a fun. I mean, I love my work. So, you know, if I can be an old chap and still contribute something, fantastic. And, you know, maybe if we think about the balance that we would like to have, not just in work hours, but also everything else, is the way to go about also configuring what we would actually like from technology. We had a summit 2 weeks ago where we convened 100 design leaders from all over the world, basically putting this question out there. And I think it's not that often in life that we have the possibility to sort of think about how would we actually want the future to be. So we spent some time thinking about actually using the UN sustainability goals and sort of proactively thinking what would a positive future look like of different questions. There are so many self-fulfilling prophecies and dystopian pictures out there that I think is actually really important, that we create images also what good looks like. Like, you know, what would the future of food be if it was fantastic? Agreed. Instead of don't eat meat anymore? What would be the future of traveling if it's not just about you are not allowed to fly anymore? Yeah. And that was an incredible energy in that group. And one of the topics, I mean, a lot of the discussion was about how we want to live in cities. And one big topic that was connected to many things was education.
Yes.
So lifelong learning, education, how we build knowledge and how we collaborate is going to be sort of a critical enabler. But I think what you could see from these different visions that people put out there, that there's a lot of reason for hope. It doesn't mean it's going to happen by itself, but I'm super motivated by that perspective to kind of team up with people, you know, experiment and visit of us our way forward and dream big and make it happen together. And I think that's the way we can not just make the world heal and better, but really take humanity to a new era. And hopefully we don't have to go to interstellar worlds because we screwed everything up here. But maybe we can do both. So that could be fun.
Indeed. Well, I know I'm super excited for the future. I think the possibilities are endless. I've really enjoyed the conversation today. So look, thank you so much for your perspectives on such a fascinating topic. I'm pretty sure we could probably talk for another 45 minutes, but look, just for purpose of time, thank you both so much for your time and your contribution. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. And there you have it, another episode of The Experience Designers. Thank you so much to my guests, Raki Rajani and Stefan Moritz from McKinsey Design. Thank you so much for your time. I know, getting diaries aligned was a real challenge. So thank you so much. I really do appreciate it and giving your viewpoint on humans and robots working together. As always, if you wish to connect with either of them, of course, I will put the links in the bio as per usual. So until the next time, thank you so much for listening and goodbye for now.